Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable, episode 89. Today we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 19, titled Sisters. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter at Onceable, or you can comment on this post on hypeable.com. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by everyone. Everyone is here. It's so exciting. We can all join in the group hate that is about to unfold. And it's just finally feels like a complete experience that we're all here and ready to, trash another episode. However, I do have a couple of silver lining moments, so I'll save the day. Don't worry, guys. So we have Karen, Jen, Laura, and Kristen, just in case you forgot who makes up the whole collective, because it's been a little bit of a patchwork situation the past couple weeks. So how are you all doing? I know you're doing fine, but... How are you doing?
We're good.
We're doing good.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to start with some favorite quotes, which, I don't know, I kind of have a feeling that some of them aren't, maybe not favorites, but will get us talking about some stuff. So, Karen, what was your favorite quote / scene / noise?
Well, my favorite part of the entire episode was when Cruella pulls up in her car and it like the camera stops on her hood ornament and you just hear this eagle call in the background because it was so dumb but so funny.
I don't know whose idea it was to put that in there, but it was kind of amazing.
Like, why? Why did they do that? I don't know. Who cares? It was great.
Someone in the sound editing department was like, this is going to be my personal Easter egg. No one's going to know what's happening, but every time I watch this, I will know.
Was it like, you know how in Pocahontas sometimes they have like the eagle cries when she's doing Colors of the Wind or whatever? Mm-hmm. It was kind of like that. It's like they borrowed it from another show.
It makes sense in Pocahontas. It doesn't make sense when Cruella's pulling up in her car.
Not at all. No, but I think it's pretty funny all the same.
To be fair... They are in the forest.
Half a mile in the forest, because half a mile apparently, or half a day's walk. Yeah. Half a day's right. walk.
The eagle swoops down and picks up the baby in the baby bucket and takes off, yeah.
And the baby's still safer than if Selena took it.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. All right, Jen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine was at the very end from Selena. And she was like, if Belle preferred eternal slumber to one more moment with you, that's hardly my fault. I'd say her judgment is improving. So yeah, I liked it. Sassy Selena giving Rumple what for, because let's face it, I think we all feel this way at this point. Like, yes, Belle, eternal sleep is way better than your other options at this point in time.
Yeah, I loved that line. Just because I was like, yes, that's exactly how we're feeling. Yeah. Kristen, what was yours?
Mine is when Regina and Selena at the beginning of the episode were kind of like yelling at each other, whatever. And Regina just goes, you want to redeem the god of death? Like, we joke around about girls trying to change boyfriends, but he's Hades. You're not going to be able to change him. Like, it's kind of like in his DNA, like if he had DNA, like it's a part of him. So, yeah, it just cracked me up.
Yeah, and I feel like she was trying to pitch it as, like, this is something that you would do. Like, you don't want me to try and change someone? And it's like, yeah, but this is, like, to a whole extreme level that no one has ever attempted in their lives. Like, I took Robin Hood for crying out loud.
Yeah. And I wrote this down. I actually quoted it during the episode because it might have been my favorite if it weren't for that. Karen, as soon as Rumple walked on screen, Karen just went, gross. And it was so perfectly timed that it was almost my favorite quote.
That's amazing.
I can see Karen doing that too. That, yep, that fits.
I just really hate you guys.
So just to be clear, your favorite quote is Karen commenting like Mystery Science Theater on the episode.
Yes.
Got it.
Maybe that's what we need to do for the podcast from now on.
Just a running
kind of live reactions from us. Just a running commentary through the show and call it a day. Because it might be better The after effect. I don't know.
There would be a lot of swearing.
Yeah.
Laura, what was your favorite quote?
So I was a little bit stuck between two, but I think the one that I'm going to go with is Emma. I don't think I've ever actually quoted Emma before, but it was, "Dad, sometimes people just cannot ever move on." And I feel like that is so applicable to why they are in the underworld. It's like, just leave. You're not going to, you know, they're not going to save some people. They're not going to save Hades. They're not going to save... I mean, to some extent, I feel like they're almost not going to save Zelina because the whole transition is too quick. Yeah, there are just some things. Some people are just so intrinsically evil or just so intrinsically screwed up. You can't fix them, particularly if they don't want to be fixed. So I just felt like that was sort of the theme song of what could have been the last several episodes, and I was like, finally somebody said it. And the other one, which was the squicky, oh my god, it made my skin crawl quote of the episode, was Hades in the sick little whisper voice going, "Will you make chaos with me?" I was just like, in 2 minutes in and I'm just squicked out. So those were my two quotes of the episode.
Yeah, the whisper voice during our group chat during the episode, I think it was Jen who said, "I keep waiting for him to say, 'I am Batman.'"
Well, he was
I totally
also like,
was too.
He was like breathing in the middle of words like Batman does. Like when it was ridiculous. And I'm like, what are you even doing?
Oh, it was so bad. It was so bad. So
was that meant to be like his sexy voice? Because like that's terrifying if it was.
I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what they're doing with Hades. I just can't. He needs to go. I was excited. I held out hope for too long, and now I'm just constantly, like, I just laugh every time he's on screen because it's ridiculous.
I mean, clearly the Batman voice works for Zelina, so.
Yeah. So my favorite quote wasn't actually, like, it wasn't my favorite quote at all, but just this moment kind of, like, got me. Because for once upon a time, like, caught me off guard with something, which is a rarity this season. And it was, I think, I don't even know if this is the right thing that he said, but Peter Pan comes back and he's like, "Don't you look wicked," or something to that effect. And I didn't know what Rumple was going to do. And this kind of like when he said that he was going to go and, you know, he repeated his, "Yeah, I know what you said, Belle, but I'm going to go do my own thing anyway." And he went to go get his dad. And I thought that was really interesting, and I was kind of excited to see Robbie Kay come back because I think he served zero purpose in the first episode when he left that like ridiculous note that was like, "I'm just gonna bounce for a while." Like, it's so stupid. I was so disappointed with his storyline, and I'm glad he gets to kind of play this villain again just for a little bit. I mean, we'll probably never see him again. It'll be like, "Oh, my dad totally told me to tell you that he's going to hurt you, but he just can't be here right now, so it's fine." Ugh. I'm just so over it.
I was happy to see Robbie Kay, too. I did like him as Peter Pan, so I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, him coming back is not the worst thing.
Yeah. I totally skipped over thumbs up, thumbs down, but I think we should change this to thumbs sideways, thumbs down. Let's just do a run through real quick. We won't get into reasoning, but we'll just do a quick, like, rundown of it. So, Karen, thumbs sideways, thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Jen?
Sideways.
Kristen?
Sideways.
And Laura?
Sideways.
I'm going sideways, too, mainly because of the reveal of Peter Pan. That's literally the only thing that's saving this for me. So let's move into this episode. We start off with, like, the fantasy dream date from the 1950s with the, like, a nice loud car and some, like, groovy, like, 50s-ish music. And, you know, they're kind of, like, awkwardly sitting next to each other. Like, they can't make eye contact, Zelina and Hades. And there's a shovel in the back of the car. But it turns out that they like, dug a ditch and got a fire going and were having some wine. And Hades is kind of like, "I'm abandoning all of my plans in order to get my heart beating again and go live in the actual Storybrooke with you." Okay. Does anyone, because I do not, remember what Hades' original plan was?
Crickets.
No. I mean, doesn't he want Belle's baby because he needs Rumple's firstborn, but I gotta tell you, I don't remember why, what it is that he gets out of having that baby. And part of it is also Zelina with the, see, this is why it's bad. We can't remember the plot. That is never a good sign.
Oh, doesn't he want to do that time, the same spell that Zelina did with the time travel to erase things?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he wants to go back so he's something. So he doesn't get banished to hell, maybe? I don't remember.
Yeah, but see, here's like a perfect example of why we've been talking about it such a muddled mess. It just took four of us to try to recall what the main point of Hades and the Underworld is, and we're how many episodes in, and we can't remember it because we're so befuddled with all sorts of other side angles, and we don't remember what the main point is. And that's sort of what we've been harping on, is we've lost sight of what the big picture is because the exposition doesn't give us a big enough of a roadmap to know what's going on.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel like there is a big picture. There's no threat. There's no time limit. There's no, like, they could live down here forever as long as, you know, someone doesn't actually kill them. Like, they have the chance to go back to the land of the living because their hearts are still beating, and there's no immediate threat. And it's like I said, like, I just didn't, that caught me off guard. I was like, wait, he had a plan, and I don't know what it was, and so I don't feel like he's giving up anything, because he was just like, I'm doing this other thing on a whim, and whatnot. But anyway, his new plan is to get his heart beating again. We have no idea how that needs to be accomplished, because that wasn't set up. And then he wants to go and live in Storybrooke with Zelina, but keep everyone else in the Underworld, which he did a little bit of housekeeping this week to tie up a loose end so we don't ask questions later. And that is that he's like, oh, and by the way, I totally put everyone's name on a headstone. So right now the only person who can actually leave is the baby, because the baby still does not have a name. So hopefully like, this kid can like just magically save the day.
That's the best thing ever. I didn't realize the child didn't have a name, so he literally can't be stuck in the Underworld because she doesn't have a name to write on the headstone. Like, that's hysterical.
Yep, that's the only the only person we have left to save us is Babyhood. gosh. All right, so Zelina thinks this plan over, and she goes back home to her little country house that she built with Rumple in Storybrooke. There's Regina sitting at the table, like the warden, who is like, where have you been? Has her magic mirror, and she's been spying on her, and it's like, God, Mom, why can't you just let me live my life? I'm trying to convert the Lord of the Underworld to be a nice person, and, you know, this is something that I finally want in life. And Regina's like, yeah, that's not going to fly. And so, naturally, Zelina's like, listen, we've only been friends, like, kind of friends for maybe a day. You can't pull this on me. And so Regina goes and gets the big guns. What did you guys think of Cora's return? Like, we had a lot of parents coming back this week, and I think I've just stopped paying attention to, like, the previews and, like, stuff that's been coming up, just because I need some sort of surprise. Otherwise, I'm just not going to be interested in the show.
Well, before we get to that, I want to talk really quickly about Regina and Zelina's relationship, because I keep going back and forth on it, and it's really bothering me. Clearly, we're not supposed to really like Zelina. I think at this point, we're supposed to understand that she's trying to be better, but she's always going to have that wicked streak in her, and I don't think she's ever going to come up to where Regina is, who has completely transformed her life. But at the same time, I find myself getting really annoyed with Regina, like, mothering her the way she is, because it's not that I don't think Zelina is worth trying to save, because it's her sister and she feels loyalty to her. And for as much as Zelina has done, I would like to see her turn into a better person. I actually really like her character when she's struggling with that divide inside of herself and she's trying her hardest to be better. But I found Regina just so overbearing this episode. And I was like, why are you acting like this? If your mother was acting like this, you would rebel. So how do you think that because you're doing these things, it's going to ingratiate you to Zelina anymore? She's just going to hate you more because of it.
Yeah, I agree with some of what you're saying, Karen. It does come off very heavy-handed. I think part of it also is the way it develops, or it's so compacted. Like, I mean, part of it is that Regina got to develop into being somebody who was redeemable over the course of two, and I'd even argue into three seasons. And we also had a Regina who, despite being the evil queen, did have a redeeming quality in that she did care about somebody besides herself fairly altruistically, and that was Henry. Versus Zelina hasn't shown any evidence of really caring about anybody but Zelina, or cares about the baby because it's all about her, not about the baby. And the timeline is so compacted that I feel like almost this idea of getting into Zelina's past and getting into what happened to her, even the whole thing with Cora, if we had focused on this somehow over the course of several episodes or even half a season, it would have been more dramatically compelling. But because it's like this tightly compacted flash of a pan in the underworld in under 45 minutes, it's not as satisfying or believable.
Yeah, and I think that with going along with what Karen said, like the fact that she's being this overbearing when she really hasn't given Zelina anything to, like, you know, like any examples of her working for Zelina's best interest so far. So, like, it's not like she could say, like, but look at X, Y, and Z that I've done for you. Why don't you trust me now? Instead, it's just like, I need you to blindly trust me right now.
Right. Or we've all been given, I feel like, every indication before this that there wasn't anything to redeem within Zelina. Like, they tried, and it just kept getting thrown back in their faces. So it's like, and suddenly she's not a crazy psychopath because why? Like, it just, I don't feel like they were totally out to get her from the beginning, but it just, there was any goodness or any break they threw at her got thrown back at them.
Yeah, this episode did feel a lot like the Snow Queen long game condensed into like one episode, where it's like, we're going to resolve all of these sisters' issues in 45 minutes because we spent a half a season already working on sister issues, so we know how to do it. I want to know what you guys thought of the new flashbacks that we got, whether you want to talk about, I'll let you guys, like, you know, we'll see where it goes, but whether you want to talk about like Cora's role or how you felt about using the like forgetful potion, I don't even know what to call it anymore. There's a river that magically sprouts this potion that you can just get at your local stream. But I just want to know what you guys thought about this addition to the past narrative for these characters. Kristen, why don't you let us know what you thought?
It was interesting. I will say I wasn't like annoyed by the children. I actually thought watching Regina and Zelina have a moment was not awful. But it just seems so cheap that they can add that, you know, Regina and Zelina had a moment where they were friends and they, you know, as children played together, and then Cora took it all away, and then magically she can give it back to them and ta-da, now they can bond. Like, it seems too easy at this point for that to just be this magical fix-all. The flashbacks themselves were fine. I didn't have any issues with those, really. I actually thought the actresses they picked for the two younger girls actually did a really good job, but yeah, it just seems like a really easy fix.
I think they were interesting and they added to the story, but I feel like we've been down the Zelina and Regina path so many times that this could have been brought up at a different point. Like, it didn't need to be brought up now. It's kind of like it was an afterthought and we needed something to fix the situation we got ourselves in. So we're going to write our way out of it by creating another flashback where this is why they hate each other so much. Look, you guys used to be friends and here it is. And oh my gosh. And so I think it's just a way for them to try and fix something that's so severely broken at this point by throwing whatever they can and seeing what sticks. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah. How does that even fix it? Because it doesn't change the fact that they still have history where they've been at each other's throats. So I'm not sure how the show feels that showing them as kids being friends changes the fact that Regina right now is being overbearing and doesn't trust Zelina, and Zelina wants to rebel and be who she feels that she is. I mean, there's so much else going on there, that something that happened 20 years ago, why is that, you know, the be-all, end-all?
Right. Or it would have been, I mean, I did like the flashback. Like, to be honest, I thought that was one of the more enjoyable parts of the episode, what gave me more of the thumb sideways to see some of the backstory. I just wish that we had seen more of it and more, again, more developed and more drawn out. I thought it was actually really kind of fascinating, but I would have liked to have seen more of Zelina's backstory before this. I mean, we had just we had glimpses of Cora dumping off the baby, but we didn't have lots of Zelina's life. I would have liked to have seen some more of this.
Yeah, especially if this is what they've been building up to all season, because we're near the end. Like, the Zelina story clearly was something that they wanted to address or like later on, and
right,
or at least in this back half of the season, but apparently where again, right, it has, and it's another storyline that suffers from having to be shoved together at the last right minute.
Well, and the other thing I'm looking at, too, I feel like Cora and Zelina are a lot more alike than Regina and Cora. I mean, Cora was also very much only about herself and, you know, everything is sort of me, me, me. I mean, even at the point that, you know, Regina needs a sister, Cora's like, oh, yeah, I got one of those. And let me just go pick that up, you know, and there's no sense of, you know, remorse or whatever. She's just sort of a convenient means to an end again. And it's just, I don't know. It's just kind of for both almost Cora and Zelina, you feel like you're not sure why they are redeemable, why they're they're just, I feel that both of them, their characters are very inconsistent.
And let's not forget that we can pretty much assume Cora dropped Zelina back off to her abusive, quote unquote, father, like wherever she was staying, just, you know, back to this guy that beat the crap out of her. And I don't know how we're supposed to forgive Cora for everything that she's done. Like, her whole big speech and everything, what ended up happening to her in the end was nice and emotional, but like Kristen and I ended up laughing through most of it because it was just ridiculous. And I don't feel that sorry for Cora. I just don't trust her anymore. Even if she was being genuine, there's just something about her that I can't fully forgive her for everything that she's done.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I found myself like borderline being like, I'm supposed to be moved here. But again, it's another one of those things where they're setting up this character who has this really long past of doing horrible things, who made like maybe 3 steps forward with Regina, but like took 100 steps back the more you learn about her. And yet you're supposed to like feel something when she is going to step over that cliff. The only thing I felt at the end after she had felt like she took care of all of her unfinished business was, oh my gosh, is this the last that we're going to see of Barbara Hershey? I love Barbara Hershey. I love this villain that they've created. Like, please don't make her go away for good. Like, please make her come back. So, I mean, we're probably going to get flashbacks because the show loves them. But I definitely, that's all I felt in that moment was, oh my gosh, please don't get rid of Barbara Hershey, because she is the only thing that kind of saved this episode. But in a, like, not in a character sense, like, oh, she's such a great character, we should watch her more. But she's just a great actress, and I like watching her play this role, no matter how bad she is, as opposed to like when Rumpel comes on screen, you're just like so disgusted with him because he's like a different end of the spectrum villain. Whereas what they did with Cora this week took her a couple of steps in that direction, and I was just disappointed by that decision. She's gone. She was able to move on to a better life. They kind of teased like, oh, maybe the Hellfire is going to take her, but no, just kidding. She's moving on to greener pastures. Who knows, yeah, I think what that I had includes.
I just think I had a really big issue with that. Like, out of all the people that, like, should have been taken by the Hellfire, it should have been her. And yet, she gets to go to the White Light for like, seriously? Like, how do you justify that? I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense to me, so.
Yeah, I guess her unfinished business, like, turned out to be, like, oh, she made her daughters, like, reconnect on a level that they could have never hoped to, but it's still, that's not enough. Like, I don't even feel like...
No, it's absolutely not enough.
So, who knows? Who knows how the underworld works? Like, do you, like, maybe... Why would she want to move on at this moment? This was a question I had while watching it. Like, do you have a sense that you have to once you take care of your unfinished business? Like, is there no choice? Because I feel like Hook had the option to go with his brother, but he didn't because he said he just wanted to stay and, like, you know, his place is there. But maybe he couldn't move on because his business wasn't done. But I don't know if it's, like, this compelling thing where, like, as soon as it's done, you have to, like, go and face your fate. Like, because if I were Cora, I would stick around to see this through and, like, maybe talk Regina out of letting her go to Hades. Oh my gosh, we'll get to that. But I just want to know what you guys think about, like, that whole thing. Like, should Cora have stayed, or would that have even been an option?
Well, the second, like, they started talking about it and she was like, you know, my fate is my fate or whatever. I looked at Karen and I was like, is she going to walk into the pit of fire? Like, is that what's happening right now? Because I couldn't understand it either. I was like, if the white light thing doesn't show, is she just going to keep walking? Or, you know, that was my question too. I couldn't understand why all of a sudden it was like, okay, now it's, I'm going to move on one way or another, ready, set, go. Like, why couldn't she just hang out in the underworld? Like, you know, I was kind of asking the same thing. Yeah, exactly. So I was very confused, but that would make sense if there was, like, a compulsion to move one way or the other after you finish your unfinished business.
I also kind of feel like Hades would do something to her at that point, because he obviously locked her up, like, took away her magic and made her be a Miller's daughter again. And if he knew the kind of effect that she had on Zelina, perhaps he would do the same thing again, because he holds a lot of power over her. We saw that in the very first episode. So I kind of feel like she was like, well, jumping into a pit of lava is probably better than being under Hades' thumb again.
That's very true. And also, is Hades, like, guard down? I feel like he knows everything that happens. And yet, like, Cora escaped, and that was the end of that. Like, he didn't do anything about it.
Or, like, James is running amok, and, like, for the liege lord of the underworld, he seems to have precious little control of it.
Yeah. I mean, he was busy setting up a romantic dining experience complete with candles and music.
And fire pits.
And fire pits. And, like, you know, he had a lot on his mind, but also... Get your world under control.
Yeah. But for, like, evil overlord, he clearly is doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he just, you know, like, Regina had more control over Storybrooke as the evil queen and had more people quaking in their boots than he does. You would think after that, I will turn you into quicksand that he pulled. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago? With the Red's, the person that Red had to go see. That he turned into, like,
Dorothy.
Yeah, Dorothy's Ann M. Like, Ann M got turned into, like, watery quicksand and then thrown in the River of Souls. Like, you would think, like, there would be more people quaking in their boots, but apparently not. Or even, like, James, I'm not really clear how he got to walk out of whatever task of drudgery he's been assigned to for his existence. Like, you know, Cora apparently had to be at the mill, and Gaston had to work in the like puppy pound from hell. Like, I don't understand, like, why James got a day pass out of whatever he's been assigned to.
Again, this is one of those things we've had a problem with since we came to the underworld. It's just anything goes rules wise because you have this, like, very powerful god, demigod, whatever he is. I don't even know at this point because he keeps referencing different things. But, you know, he's just... Thank you, Karen. I knew you would swoop in and correct me immediately, so I was just like, I'll just wait for it. Yeah, he's just, you know, he, like, anything he says goes because, well, who's going to question him? He's all-powerful, and this world is, like, its own playground, and rules don't matter.
Although, I have to say my sort of favorite part of the entire episode was looking at Robin Hood carrying what is clearly the cleanest baby bucket and the cleanest pink blankie
after it's
been been out of the wood, been out in the woods for how long? I was like, that is cleaner than clean could be.
Yeah. So the other part of this episode, besides the, you know, Zelina and Hades and Regina and Cora mess, was that James and David met on the street, Western style, and James decided to tase David. I'm trying to separate their names. And he locked him up in a cell and kind of, like, posed as David so that he could follow Emma to Robin's hiding spot, which is about a half day's journey into the woods. And so, because apparently the parameters of Storybrooke are that big to transfer down there. I thought Storybrooke was like 1 square mile, but you can have half a day's journey into the woods. And so they find Robin, who's just like, oh, I swear he's going to come out at any point. And he just like emerges with this like pristine, beautiful child, and he's all nice and clean. So maybe he has like a cabin somewhere, or, you know, something. Maybe Regina hooked him up with like a tent that's actually one of those like Harry Potter tents where it's like gorgeous inside and has plenty of sleeping room and a shower and endless food, because what is this baby eating? All they needed were wipes. Where is he getting diapers is all, another thing I want to know. So yeah, I thought that Josh Dallas did a great job this episode, because I love when he plays James, and I liked watching him play James play David. So did you guys like seeing James again?
I believe my initial reaction to this was, quote, I want to rip my face off.
Oh, yes. No. It was my other Karen quote for the episode, yes.
It really stresses me out and it makes my blood boil, because I hate it when people do this sort of thing, and the trope of like one person pretending to be another person and being really terrible at it, and then nobody like noticing something's off. So this is why the episode ended up being a thumbs down for me, because I really hated this whole like plot point. But I liked what ended up coming out of it with, like, first of all, James being gone, although it was kind of sad, and I agree with David, like, you know, that was his brother. It still meant something to him. And I like that in the end, like, nothing worked out for Cruella and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, I did not like it overall.
Oh, man. I did like it. I only because I think it gives Josh Dallas something different to do instead of just, like, tagging along with, like, yeah, I totally agree. Hope's the way to go. And then it just gave him it gave him something different to do and, like, just exercise a different – yeah, even though it's, like, not great, it was there.
Yeah, well, it really is Snow's yes man. Mm-hmm. Like, every time Snow says something, he just kind of goes, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, yeah. So it was nice to see him get more to do.
That is very true. Although I did say the fight against himself or whoever was the poor schmoo being his double, there were moments that I wanted to do like a la Batman of the 1960s and go like zap, yowie, pow, you know, as they were having the slug out there on the dock. That was kind of hilarious. But yeah.
Yeah. So basically what happened, like, I mean, James is now gone, and you know, I think I wrote this line in my recap. It was like, 'cause we only have time to deal with therapy for one sibling relationship, and we're never going to have another moment later on, so we're just going to push one of these into the River of Souls and just call it a day. So yeah, James is gone, unfortunately. You know, Hook showed up and like provided a hug for Emma. It's literally all he did. He like pushed Cruella out of the way or something, and that was it. That was the end of that. He's really helpful this episode. He like unscrewed his hook and got Cora out, and then he just, like, hugged Emma on the dock, and that's all he did.
Yeah, I thought maybe he helped David escape, but then David took all the credit for it and was like, yeah, I know how to escape my own cell. Like, I thought maybe, okay, off screen, Hook went and found David and helped him out, and, you know, you're good. No, David took all the credit. He escaped himself, so I was like, okay, so Hook literally did nothing. Like, he actually was just walking around town until, you know, David got out, and then it was like, oh, okay, let's go to the dock. Like, yeah, it's fabulous.
Is there like a tally somewhere on the number of people that either have moved on across the little bridge thing or have just been killed at the hands of the visitors from Storybrooke. I mean, it's how many? It's a good number now, isn't it?
Well, we have two killed, right? We have Gaston and James. Yeah, that one. I'm like, that one, the twin. So that's two that just got knocked into the water. And then you have Hook's brother and all of his pirate friends, which is a large number. Regina's mother and her father. Was that it? Did anyone else
walk into the light?
And Hercules and Meg.
Hercules and Meg walked into the light. Aunt Em was at Hades doing, though. That wasn't the visitor's technical fault.
True. She's still gone.
Well, it was because they were going to find her. If they didn't
physically do it.
If they didn't think about bottling a kiss,
I can't.
Oh my goodness. Gracious.
Between true love's kiss, bottling a kiss, like seriously, can we just move past the kissing?
Another thing we're not able to move past is the fact that Henry is still just sitting in his room writing fan fiction all day. Because
where was Henry tonight? He could have totally been useful, I'm sure, in some way, shape, or form.
He could at least be writing fan fiction with Robin in the world's cleanest baby blankie in the filthy forest. You know.
I'd like to figure out, like, where do you think that at this point, we still have three episodes to go, but at this point, because I have no idea, I want to just go run down the list and just give me your best guess for where the season is going to go. Laura.
Oh, yes, thanks. They like putting me in the spot. I think where it's going is the end reveal, what they had tonight, is that Rumple has hooked up with his father. There's now going to be some sort of chaos ensuing next season where Rumple and dear old dad are now running things in Storybrooke.
All right. That's good. I like the use of Rumple, unfortunately. Jen.
I don't really know. It's been so hard because this story is so disjointed in so many levels that I have no solid grasp on what they can possibly concoct for next fall. Like, do they get out of the underworld? Let's hope so. What does that mean for Storybrooke? Who's going to run Storybrooke? Does Hades somehow win everybody over and he becomes, you know, does he go to Storybrooke and start running the show? Maybe. Now, this would be a dream come true. Somehow Hades finds his love with Zelina, and so he gets out of the underworld, but someone still has to control the underworld. So Rumple gets left behind and has to now run the underworld. And
that's where I was going to go with
Hades version. Oh, sorry. That was totally on the fly because I was just making stuff up. But something, I don't know. Like, legitimately, I've got nothing because it's just bad. All of it. This storytelling, the second half of this season has been so rough. And I love good storytelling. And I love quirky storytelling and all of those things. And I feel like we've got nothing. That this whole second half has been really, really stagnant and there's no direction. And without direction, I can't even, like, I could, you know, say, oh, there's going to be a green or a rainbow colored smoke monster. And then this, you know, Belle's baby is going to be born. And then everyone's going to have to go try and save that baby somewhere. You know, something just ridiculous because I've got zero other than my crazy, let's leave Rumple in hell where he belongs plot. I've got nothing.
Kristen, what about you? Any ideas?
Maybe this is wish fulfillment. Henry writes them all a loophole because he's so tired of hanging out in the underworld by himself while everyone else runs around doing all of the fun stuff. He just decides that he's going to use his author powers. He writes them a loophole. They all return to Storybrooke, and then they find out that the loophole is unraveling the stories and they have to, like, find a way to right his wrong and blah, blah, blah. That's my guess.
Because
at this point, like, Henry hasn't been used at all, and I feel like he's the only one who can get them out of their current predicament now that they are all literally written, all of their names are on headstones, including Henry's. So it's like, well, he's the author, he's got the power, let's see him use it.
All right, Karen.
Yeah, I mean, not that the time gave me anything brilliant, but I hadn't thought about Rumple being left behind, which would, oh God, that would make me so happy.
Does that make your day?
Uh-huh. Yes, it does, because honestly, it allows them to keep Rumple as a character, but maybe not have him at the forefront of the story, and maybe only visit him, like, once in a while when they have to do dealings with, you know, the devil, but I honestly think that Zelina is going to figure out what is most important to her, and I think that's going to end up being her sister. And I think Hades, I don't know, I kind of feel like Hades isn't being genuine. Maybe he is, maybe he's tricking himself into loving Zelina in order to get out of there, but I would kind of like to see him be left behind in the underworld pouting because he didn't get his way. And maybe they can find a way to keep him down there so they don't have to deal with him like popping up in Storybrooke and making their lives hell all the time. But I would like to see them all kind of get out of there. The weird thing to me is like they can't empty the underworld. The underworld is there for a reason, and people are always going to be going to the underworld because they're always going to have unfinished business. So this whole needing to save everybody thing doesn't make sense to me. And I don't see them just being like, okay, all of a sudden the underworld doesn't exist. You either move on or you don't. Like,
yeah,
I don't know where they would go otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's a good, I definitely want to see the underworld still exist by season's end, mainly because I feel like it does serve a purpose. Like, once you know, if you die and then everybody else dies and they come down there, like, there is still that chance for you to have your unfinished business resolved without the hero intervention that no one asked for. So I think I would really love to see Rumple down there just because it, A, does kill Gold finally, and B, like, you know, it gives Robert Carlyle the opportunity to come back to the series, but, you know, have enough, like, just end that character's storyline because it's so bad and there's just no way to write yourself out of, like, redeeming Rumple at this point. Yeah, that was going to be my big plot twist, but
honestly, though, like, I don't know what they can do at this point to save themselves.
Yeah, and like, I feel like,
what other stories could they pull out? Like, are they going to meet someone in the underworld that then we're going to transition to their, you know what I mean? Like, into their storyline?
Yeah.
So, like, where could they go next? What fairy tale can they pull from next?
Yeah, and I'm kind of hoping that Zelina does stick around, but they give her a better story or work on her story or do something, because I do think that the, like, Bex Mater is brilliant in the role, but she's just been given such awful stuff, and it's hard to watch. So I'm hoping, like, you know, maybe Summer Vacation helps these people out and they can figure out what they can do with all of these brilliant characters, because if it comes to the point where you have to give characters off half a season or something, like, please do that. Some of these people aren't series regulars. They don't have to be so heavily involved at the cost of losing out on the main stories. Like, I feel like there's so much that's going unresolved with Emma and Hook. Like, are we just supposed to assume that they're fine? They're not. They still haven't talked about anything or done anything, and that's just one couple. Like, you still have to have, like, Snow. I mean, Snow and David are always going to be fine, I guess. But, like, I just feel like those characters haven't done anything. I think Henry needs to be addressed by both of his mothers and not just his grandfather trying to be a cool bro, like, you could tell me anything type of person. And there's so much attention being given to things that don't matter. And they are just, like we've been saying every week, flash in the pan type stories, like, oh, this week we're going to deal with this, and then it's going to go away forever. And then we're going to deal with this, it's going to go away forever. Like, I just don't feel like that's feeding a larger theme this season. So, like Jen was saying, it could, like, a rainbow smoke monster could come and just swoop everybody up, and we could be dealing with a Finding Nemo situation. Who knows? Like Karen suggested.
Hey, at least it'd be different.
I loved that so much. I was like, what if everyone were fish? That would be amazing. Do you guys have anything else you would like to talk about? Next week, we're going into mazes for some reason. They're just going to go in a maze. It's going to be great.
Are they going to the labyrinth, though? Is that the labyrinth?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I feel like it is.
That would be kind of cool, maybe.
But the way that the coming attraction, like, pitched it, if they'd pitched it as explicitly saying the labyrinth, I would have been like, okay. But they were like, a journey that they can never escape. And I'm like,
Into the lowest part of the underworld or
and like,
something.
Yeah, and like, this is where Emma and Hook are finally going to have their moment. I'm like, I don't need that.
I just want them to leave the world of the pink Easter egg dye filter and the Con Ed venting system that makes it look like a Superfund site. I just want them to leave.
Yeah, that's the first thing that Emma says in the coming attraction, what am I, is it a movie? But the trailer, she's just like, we can all get out of here. And I'm like, oh, finally someone's talking about this. Like, it's not just like, you know, it'll happen. Maybe. Let me look through the storybook again and see what I can find. So we'll see.
Yeah, like, one of the first lines of the trailer was like, time is running out. And I was like, wait, they've had a clock?
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, wait a second. There's been a ticking clock on this? Because nobody knew. Like, yeah. So I'm interested to find out that they've had a time limit and they just weren't aware of it.
Oh, gosh. I wonder how they're going to write that in. Be like, oh, yeah, totally. This whole time. Like, you didn't know? It's just, the sun was actually slowly setting the whole time. And, you know, it's never night. And
now that your names are on the tombstones, you have 72 hours to get the hell out of here, yeah. Or you're trapped forever. Have a nice death/afterlife.
In which case, Emma and Regina, already done.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Well, next week's episode is named Firebird, which, in case everyone forgot, which I did, that's the name of the operation that Henry, his only contribution so far, besides giving updates with his book, was to give this operation a name. However, the operation's over, isn't it? Wasn't the operation to save Hook? And they did that already? So I feel like it needs a new operation name.
No. Wasn't the operation to save everybody in the underworld?
Oh, God, I hope not. Oh, but I think you're right. I think you're
right.
That
would be excessive.
I do think you're right, however. Oh, boy. You can't. You just physically can't do it. Some people deserve to be there and meet their own fate. Like, that's just... That's what
can't
happens.
You see, like, Emma, like, having people line up to, like, have their finish their unfinished business, and so they, like, have this long line of people down Main Street that they're, like, helping them finish their business and then walk them straight to the cave where they either end up in fire or end up in the light, and, like, it would be ridiculous, but I feel like that's, that's about where we're at now.
I really can't take it. No more! No more!
They need to just channel Oprah and be like, you get a pass, and you get a pass, and you get a pass. Everybody gets a pass.
I was going to go with American Idol judges, and, like, it all comes down to Simon's vote. Because, like, one judge, like, Paula, will love everyone and be like, you deserve a better life. Randy will be like, no, from my musical experience, I don't think you earned it. And then Simon will be like, either just... Like, he'll melt and be a kind person, or he'll just turn it up to 100 and just send them straight to hell. Yeah, Underworld Idol. It would be much better than what we got right now. I'll tell you that.
How many more episodes left?
Three.
Three.
She says with dejection in her voice.
Just three more, guys. We could do it. No, I lied. I lied. Oh, damn it. It is 2 hours. This is what I wanted to confirm, is that it's 2 hours.
Oh, so really, it's 4 episodes left?
Technically, it's 4 episodes left. 3 Sundays left. Yeah, so we have 3 weeks left, but 4 episodes. So the finale that's airing on May 15th is going to be 2 episodes. I have a feeling we're going to get out of the underworld just because, you know, we tend to resolve what happens in the first with this season in the first hour or so, and then we kind of set up the second half, like the next season in the second hour. So the names of the last episodes are Firebird, which is next week, then it's Last Rites, and then the double whammy for the finale is Only You and An Untold Story. So I have a feeling that An Untold Story is going to be where we set some stuff up for next time.
Could the Untold Story, storybook is now Camelot?
Yeah, we still need to address that.
No, because Camelot is still a thing.
Oh, we forgot all about that.
Yeah,
we totally forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still, like, a thing that's happening. Like, Mary Margaret just walks back and he's like, what is this? I bet it just looks like a Renaissance fair up there.
I was going to say, it looks like a Renaissance fair. Big flags everywhere, tents, billowing. It's all good. Jousting.
An ode to Shakespeare is just, like, being posted on the mayor's door and just all of it.
Gosh. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. So we'll be back for the final couple of episodes. And until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.